Hey, we got a crazy situation here in South Africa. More and more regulation, more and more warnings that this is what is affecting our industry and our economy, and less listening from Pretoria. We've got another example with the aviation industry, where as a result of the regulators' inability to listen to members of the industry, all small aircraft, well, not all, but 70% of them, are supposed to be grounded now. And not all of those people who own the aircraft know that this is the case. What's happened is there's a regulation that has been put out by the regulatory authority of airlines. It's been following the letter of the law introduced from elsewhere, not for South African conditions. And the impact on an industry that employs 300,000 people and to give you an example, at the recent NAMPO conference, more than 400 small aircraft brought people into that NAMPO conference. So it's a very active area. There are many parts of SADC where you can't get to when you try to drive. So you've got to go with helicopters or fixed-wing aircraft. Well, all of this is now theoretically grounded because of regulations that have just not adapted to the South African circumstance. Earlier today, I spoke with two experts in the field, the Chief Operating Officer of the Commercial Aviation Association of South Africa, Kevin Story, and the Senior Editor of International Air Affairs publication, Johan Lottering.
The CAA has decided through a general notice that they are going to not issue what's called a certificate of airworthiness. So everybody has to self-ground their aircraft, which causes mass havoc. It affects things like firefighting, so all the forestry. It affects possible movement of various people and products. And it has a huge effect on the industry. So that's where we sit today. And we are...
In essence, Cessnas, Beechcraft, Pipers, all of those type of aircraft, which are used in business for people to fly around the SADC region, and as you were saying earlier, things like firefighting, etc., do they now have to be grounded if they haven't had a engine overhaul in the last 12 years, no matter how little they might have been used?
Absolutely. So that is what's happened. The CAA has started issuing letters. And, you know, the two engines in there, it's a Lycoming or Continental engine. I'm just using it in broad strokes here. You know, even the Americans, the FAA, recognize that Lycoming has a program that you can go on where you can continue to fly these over and above. It also affects all the training schools because the training schools fly very little of some of these engines, especially for twins. So it impacts all the training schools as well. And it's a massive expense. Just to overhaul one of these can be up to R1 million, R2 million. And then the other problem is the spares. They're just not available. And then taking our geopolitical position with the tariffs put in place from the USA, the cost of maintaining these is just prohibitive. So we're in a right royal pickle, as they say.
Johan Lottering is a senior editor with International Air Affairs. Johan, is there anywhere else in the world that has a similar application of these regulations?
We have a similar or an analogical situation in Australia. And what frustrates me most is that the deja vu nature of the situation. We've been at this juncture approximately 20 years before where we... visited the rationale for having these engines major overhauled every 20 years. And that rationale was based on passive storage and inactive engines. And the reason we negotiated a different dispensation, which is quite permissible in terms of our ICAO membership was on account of all these practicalities mentioned, and we developed a service bulletin or a special routine where you could inspect the engine internally with a boroscope. It's a little light and optic fiber, and see what the engine's condition is like inside the cylinders. You know, air is hygroscopic and it condensates on the cylinder walls, and it can cause pitting, but you can lightly hone it and refit it at a tenth of the expense and keep the engines going. And some of these, I can say aspects, technical aspects, refer to the components fitted to the engine. You know, like the fuel pump and oil pumps and those things, where you have seals hardened, gaskets hardened, and the likes, you know. If you understand this a little bit more technically, the damage comes as these engines that are static drip dry.
Where the concern is here and why we're interested is the impact this will have on the economy and the overreach that we're seeing from the regulators. Kevin, who are these regulators? How much have these guys flown?
So the Civil Aviation Authority has, you know, people that are qualified as pilots in this area. These are what we call AMEs, aviation maintenance engineers. The question we have as industry, are they suitably qualified? You know, we have individuals in our industry that are guiding us that have over 40 years of experience opening these engines, maintaining these engines. So the question or the jury is out whether the regulator has this sort of brain trust that is there. They seem to think they do. In a true partnership, and what we see with other regulators around the world, they partner with industry. They use the expertise with industry to guide. And in this case, we have sat with them time and time again and guided. And it's basically saying, well, we, the regulator, we have the safety card. We're going to do it exactly like this, and we're not going to take guidance from the industry, which is a very unfortunate situation. And it's almost draconian in ideology. You were talking about the costs with this. The costs are immense, and it goes even further. If you can't fly this aircraft, then it's going to sit on the ground, and statically it's going to have more damage that happens to it. So the costs of overhaul is going to get greater. The other issue that comes in is if the cost to overhaul is a greater percentage than the value of the actual aircraft, then many of these people flying it in a recreational or GA environment, they will want to sell these aircraft. They won't be replaced. So that will have a knock-on effect that there will not be work for all the AMOs. Ultimately, there won't be work for the regulator because they won't need the inspectors because there'll be no inspections needed because there won't be the aircraft. The other problem is if you want to get a export C of A, it's the same thing. You have to get the C of A. So a certificate of airworthiness is a maintenance, it's a certificate that says that your aircraft has passed all the maintenance elements and it is considered safe to fly. So therefore, if you have that certificate issued by the authority, you are enabled to fly the aircraft, providing you have a pilot license and all those good things. So if you want to export an aircraft, you have to fly it over the borders to the new purchaser's geographical location. You need an export certificate of airworthiness. And if you can't get a certificate of airworthiness, you can't get an export certificate of airworthiness. So you can't even sell your plane. So you'll end up like we had in Zimbabwe many years ago with aircraft just rotting on the runways, etc., because you can't sell it. So the impact here is we could see roughly 1,000 aircraft just put out to pasture. That's what will happen. Because the people will not be able to afford to maintain this to the level that the CAA thinks is up to standard. But we have proven empirical evidence that it is not the case. So this is, I've got a rule and I'm going to apply it. It doesn't matter the damage because we are the regulator. We say it's safety. Meanwhile, there is no safety under, you know, underpinning it. And that is the challenge. That is the problem.
Is this maybe a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to what happened at Saldanha Bay, where aircraft safety came into the public spotlight? Might this be a reaction from that, or do you have any more insight into what actually happened with that accident?
I really don't think this is connected to Saldanha, because that aircraft had a totally different kind of engine. The engines affected are mainly piston engines. I think we got to go back to the roots of this problem, and the Americans have a phobia about indemnity or liability. So I don't want to reinvent the wheel, but we've had a thing in aviation that has affected general aviation across the board globally in the 1980s, where Piper, Beech, Cessna, Mooney closed their factories for a period of 12 years because there was a claim, an oil baron, like in the J.R. Ewing days, took off with a Cessna. The seat slid backwards. He turned the airplane upside down and got killed. And then the U.S. Congress determined that due to the magnitude of the claim, which was in the order of 1 billion rand, producers of aircraft and engines should have product liability insurance. And then when the world underwriting community sat up and took notice of the magnitude of the claims, the insurance component of making these engines and aircraft were prohibitive. And only after it was reversed 12 years later did this situation start to normalize. But that phobia stuck with the manufacturers. Remember, our fleet of aircraft is up to 50 years old. To make it plain and simple, the simplicity of design makes for longevity of these engines. And I'm trying to keep it not technical, but technological advancements have helped us, like engine monitors, the digital engine monitors, etc., to better monitor these engines. So we negotiated for a region-specific dispensation to have these engines inspected regularly in two-year intervals, instead of doing the unnecessary engine overhauls prematurely. You know, your regular pilot.
I get it. Yeah.
Okay.
It's good stuff. No, and I think, thank you. You actually unpacked it for us really well there. Kevin, I think the real essence is that we do know that Pretoria loves to manage and demand and to show the private sector what it should be doing. It appears like one of those instances here as well, with the unintended consequences, or hopefully they were unintended consequences, being very, very scary. Can you explain to us whether or not this is going to affect, or has the potential to affect, commercial airlines, for instance? I was looking through, you mentioned that possibly Pratt and Whitney engines, which are in Airbus's, Boeing's, etc. Is there a potential there that that's also going to happen, that perhaps SEMAIR would have to ground some of its planes?
It's in very simple terms. It's based on the engine. So if the OEM at the present moment states that your engine has to be overhauled at that calendar year, irrespective of the engine, then you would have to comply. And that is what the regulator is doing. Even though they've got regulations in place, they have put this general notice, which apparently they believe supersedes the current regulations which make provision for the ongoing airworthiness of these aircraft and the maintenance program. So there is a potential, but most of the airlines, etc., use other types of engines, jet engines, turbo-powered engines. This is mostly going to affect the smaller piston-driven ones that are moving small cargo, small freight around. For example, taking fresh produce up to the game lodges, etc., in Botswana, etc. So a lot of the tourism industry where you would have small aircraft moving small, high-value customers, that is where you will see the impact. But it is not that as much as the impact that the people won't be able to afford, and therefore the maintenance organizations will not have business. The spares will not be purchased and brought into the country. So the whole value chain starts crumbling. And once that crumbles, the whole transformation and development area where you want to bring the youth, the 70% unemployed, to bring them into the training to become aircraft maintenance engineers, to do their pilot licenses, to fly these aircraft and build that sector, that entire value chain is what is currently at risk. And you need to realize that we have requested of the Director of Civil Aviation in 3 legal letters to please resolve this. We've had numerous meetings to guide on what this impact would be. And it's as if you are speaking to deaf ears. It does not happen. It seems to be that certain egos are driving it rather than what is the good for South Africa. South Africa is different to the United States or Australia or Botswana for that matter. So we have to do what is correct for South Africa, what is correct for our fleets, what is correct for how we fly our aircraft. And we have a fantastic track record. We have been doing this safely for 50 years. So that is the critical element that needs to come into consideration. And the regulator really needs to understand partnership, true partnership, not feigned partnership. And that is what we are seeing. At the very upper echelon and in certain departments, it's going quite well. But in some of these departments, where especially if they feel they do not have the same level of expertise as possibly the industry, because remember, you know, we've got lots of engineers that are hugely experienced. I think there's that problem, and they go, well, we now are in power, we're going to do it our way. And if you don't do the checks and balances, if you don't check what the impact will be, and if you don't really know how many engines are going to be affected, then how can you make a decision? And that is the challenge that we have. And it's not just here. It's in multiple different areas of industry. But this is affecting aviation as it is. You know, maybe our grandkids won't be able to see a small Cessna or Beechcraft if they carry on like this, flying in our skies, or even go to any air show where we fly these aircraft. That is the seriousness of what they are putting in place here. I hope that comes across clearly.
Kevin Story is the Chief Operating Officer of the Commercial Aviation Association of South Africa. Johan Lottering is a Senior Editor with International Air Affairs, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.